Crisis of Confidence, Carl R. Truman, Crossway, 2024, 192 pages, a book review from Books at a Glance by Gary Stewart. Carl Truman's Crisis of Confidence is an updated and revised version of his previous work, The Creedal Imperative, published by Crossway in 2012. It contains the same number of chapters as its predecessor, with new material sprinkled in throughout that highlights the importance of historic creeds and confessions in addressing the recent cultural ascendancy of expressive individualism. Page Roman numeral 15. As it turns out, the historic confessions of the Church are not only helpful for Christian belief and worship, they are also invaluable in helping us understand who we are, anthropology, and how we are to live our lives, ethics. According to Truman, creeds and confessions are even more important now than before. They anchor us in history, they offer us reasonably comprehensive frameworks for thinking about the connections between God, anthropology, and ethics, and above all, they point us to the transcendent God who rules over all things. Page Roman numeral 17. In chapter 1, Truman addresses some of the cultural trends that war against fundamental truths that a healthy confessionalism presupposes. These trends include things like rejection of external authority, the belief that feelings are authoritative, a dour view of the past, consumerism, disbelief in human nature, fear of excluding others, and a distrust of language and propositional statements. These trends in contemporary culture have influenced the Church by making adherence to confessions and creeds implausible and distasteful. Page 34. To counter the current situation, Truman advances four basic presuppositions which must be embraced for confessionalism to have a sound footing. Human beings are not free, autonomous creatures defined by internal feelings, but creatures made in the image of God and always defined by external relationships to God and each other. The past is important and has positive relevance to teach us. Language must be an appropriate vehicle for stable transmission of truth across geographical space, and there must be body or an institution that can authoritatively compose and enforce creeds and confessions. Pages 10 through 11. Truman presses those in the Church to reflect critically on how their assessment of confessionalism has been shaped by the cultural forces around them. Page 35. In Chapter 2, Truman makes the biblical case for confessionalism and argues that confessionalism follows naturally from the teaching of Scripture. The Bible itself expects the Church to use something like creeds and confessions in its governing of believers. Truman rebuts two major objections to confessionalism raised in Chapter 1 by asserting the adequacy of human language to communicate divine truth, pages 37 through 46, and also by asserting that human beings have a fixed essence that remains consistent across various cultures and ages, pages 46 through 50. Truman then argues that the Church has been instituted by God to be a community with its own structure of authority, centering upon the elders in the Church who are charged with ensuring that the members of the Church adhere to sound doctrine and faithfully transmit sound teaching to the next generation of believers. As elders exercise their ministerial authority, they are to hold fast to the form of sound words, 2 Timothy 1:13 of the King James Version. Truman places emphasis on the word form in the passage, arguing that the New Testament charges elders to be more than just faithful to scriptural concepts, page 59. Elders are not just to memorize and recite the scriptures either, they are to adhere to forms of language which encapsulate the teachings of the scriptures. Truman asserts, from 2 Timothy 1:13, that the Bible itself seems to demand that we have forms of sound words, and that is what creeds are, page 60. Truman argues that other passages in Scripture support the idea that the Church is to adopt and use creedal statements, including Philippians 2:5 through 10, 1 Timothy 1:15, 1 Timothy 3:16, 2 Thessalonians 2:15, 2 Thessalonians 3:6, and 1 Corinthians 11:2. Those who desire to be faithful to the teaching of the Bible should feel compelled to see extra-biblical creeds and confessions used in church and denominational life as subordinate standards to Scripture. In Chapter 3, Truman looks at the history of the early Church and explores why the Church felt compelled to draft creedal statements in the first few centuries of the Church. Early Church creeds had both a pedagogical and ecclesiastical function, and not to have the early creeds would leave a functional vacuum on fundamental doctrines that would inevitably be filled with something else. Truman explores the specifics of creedal statements that were developed from the period of the Didache to the Council of Chalcedon. Through confessional developments, the Church's position on what the Bible teaches about Christ became stabilized. The early church's doctrinal statements reflect the interconnected nature of biblical doctrines, and they helped the church distinguish heretical teaching from orthodox teaching. They also helped the church to pedagogically instruct others in the Christian faith. In chapter 4, Truman goes on to examine a selection of major doctrinal standards that emerged in the 16th and 17th centuries, the Anglican Articles, the Book of Concord, the Three Forms of Unity, the Westminster Standards, and the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. Truman closes this chapter by arguing against adopting a pick-and-choose form of generic confessionalism, calling believers to adopt a particular confession and the ecclesiastical commitments that go along with it. In chapters 5 and 6, Truman shows that a practical usefulness of creeds and confessions for the life of the church. Given the doctrinal precision and pedagogical aim of the creeds, Truman asks, why would we not use them? Page 141. All churches have forms of words and a type of liturgy that they use, even if unacknowledged. The creeds were intended to assist us in worshiping the one true God, and their use can help the church be appropriately countercultural in its worship. Pages 137 through 139. In addition to being useful for corporate worship, the creeds and confessions of the church are practically useful in setting guardrails around the church's teaching. They also offer succinct statements of the Christian faith and provide needed moral guidance for the church. Truman lists many other ways that creeds and confessions promote healthy churches. Truman's treatment of confessionalism will challenge and stimulate consideration of a number of topics that are important for the church today. The summary above has not done justice to the extent and scope of issues that Truman touches on, often in passing. Along the way, he deals more significantly with questions such as, should church elders be held to a different confessional commitment than ordinary church members? Should churches revise the historic confessions for today? Truman takes positions on these questions, which are both prudential and historically informed. Truman has written this book under the conviction that creeds and confessions are vital to the present and future well-being of the church. Page 1. Truman argues that there is a biblical imperative as well as a practical imperative for churches to adopt full-orbed creeds and confessions that are open to public consideration and used to protect and inculcate the depositive truth that has been entrusted to the church. All in all, this book will challenge Christians who reject confessionalism for a no-creed-but-the-Bible position that is common in many parts of American evangelicalism. Truman's writing is thought-provoking and clearly articulated. This book deserves to be widely read and considered. Dr. Gary Stewart. Dr. Gary Stewart is an associate professor of history and dean of the School of Humanities and Social Sciences at Colorado Christian University. He specializes in American political and religious history and has published works on the American Revolution and Christian approaches to social reform in antebellum America.